I think Ms. Hayes just set us up really well. I have to thank her for that. Just a little bit of, we have nothing to disclose. And before I start, I just wanted to say that, you know, this is not a research project. It's an implementation project. We're not researchers. And also to talk a little bit about when you hear the word Muslim populations, I think there's 1.2 billion Muslims in the world. So the population that we're particularly going to talk about is the Somali community, the newest African Americans in Minnesota. There's about 85,000 to 90,000 Somalis that have been relocated to the United States, and one in three are now in Minneapolis, in the Minneapolis Twin Cities area. So it's huge population, and depending on, Ahmed and I debate about this, depending on who you ask, they would say 30,000 to 100,000. If you've been in Minneapolis, they're everywhere, so you'll see. so that is Somali, and if you're geographically wondering, I don't know why we ended up from sub-Saharan Africa to the coldest state, one of the coldest states, but that's another topic. Oh, you do? Okay. Yeah, why we ended up in these cold states, I don't know. But about over 95% of Somalis are Muslims. So this project started when I worked for one of the larger health systems in Minnesota that's affiliated with the University of Minnesota as well. And as a nonprofit health system with the Accountable Care Act, we were required to do a community health comprehensive community health needs assessment in the communities that health system served. And as I said, Somalis is a growing population. So when we did that needs assessment in 2012, what we found is there was a significant need in the areas of mental health. And just warn you, they really didn't use those words. They talked about the symptoms they were experiencing. So we deduced it, and it was our interpretation that is what they were talking about around depression. Somalia has been going through over 24 years of a civil war. People have been in multiple different states before they even come to the United States, and also many years in a refugee camp. So you can just kind of imagine some of the trauma and experiences that they had that really can affect their emotional and mental well-being. PTSD is another issue, and also substance abuse. There are traditional substances like khat, I don't know if you are familiar with that, that the community uses, but we're also seeing emergence in the use of the substances that are more common in the United States, alcohol, marijuana, other drugs as well. And then with that, what was really clear in the focus groups that we did is the issue of stigma. Even the people who had the symptoms, they were really overwhelmed by the shame and guilt associated with having those symptoms, the nightmares, the feeling sad because you're missing your children, or you just don't want to do the activities of daily living. People didn't really say, this is something that I can share with people easily. And also because of the language and cultural barriers, we are in Minnesota is predominantly Scandinavian community, and so the language and cultural barrier is even more prominent. So that creates sense of isolation and not being able to be around each other. You know, if you live in a suburb, you can't really see your relatives, and some relatives are far, far away. So that people really felt that they were extremely isolated from them. And you guys are all familiar with the issue of stigma. And not only do you have to deal with your own pain and issue around mental illness and all the symptoms associated with it, but it can even have a more devastating consequence for people that are actually trying to cope with it in a foreign country. So what do we do? One of the things I think that we decided to do is because the community didn't have its own language to describe mental illness and had so much stigma around it, we said, you know, we really need to start. If the health system went out and did a massive outreach into the community, we were worried that we would re-stigmatize and we would even cause more harm to the community. So it was really important to take a step back and really look at who are the enablers and facilitators of this kind of a dialogue so that we can introduce the topic in a way that is comfortable for people and then give them the language and the skills to be able to describe it in their own context and in their own community settings. And there's a lot of imams are what you would call in the Christian context, pastors, ministers, those kind of people. Some are trained formally and some are laymen in the mosques. And what we found in the literature is there's actually quite a lot of research that documents the role of imams as people that can be seen as indirect agents of Allah's will, because we say, inshallah, you know, if God is willing. So to be able to use them as educators and advisors in the community, we thought would be such a powerful way for the health system to bridge that gap, you know, between the system and people that they see as people that, you know, want to label them and that they don't trust and they see as kind of an institutional barrier to people that they really trust and have a lot of faith in. And as we began to do outreach with the community, what we also, with the imam or the religious community, what we also realized is people were already, these imams were already overwhelmed with amount of issues, mental health related issues that people were bringing up to them. And they were really were willing to at least engage in a conversation, even though they really didn't know where the conversation was going to lead us all. So what was the project goal? The project goal was simply to reduce the stigma, and the way in which we wanted to reduce the stigma was engage the imams in a dialogue. The first session we did, Ahmed remembers this, the agenda, 3 hours of it was just a dialogue. We didn't even begin to talk about mental health. We just wanted to use that as a focus group, ask them what people were talking about, what do they think of it themselves, so at least we can kind of collect some information about that before we did the intervention, and then ask them if this is a way that is culturally and spiritually appropriate for them to receive education. Would they be willing to get this education from a trained therapist that are... you know, that come from both worlds, both the Minnesota natives as well as the Somali Somali-speaking therapist. And then increasing their knowledge. So at least, you know, knowledge is power. The more they know, the more they can help. And then providing them with schools, with skills and resources necessary to promote better access to care. So we recruited 10 imams from 4 mosques in the Minneapolis area. We started to conduct monthly trainings, ranged 3 hours to 4 hours each. We did 8 in 2013 and 10 in 2014. And these sessions are facilitated by a Somali-speaking therapist, Ahmed Hassan, and native therapist who understands the biomedical and more of the mainstream ways of caring. And Colleen, that you see on the left side, was our initial therapist, and she retired and moved on, and we have a new therapist that works with Ahmed right now. Here, these are the imams, and as you can see, they range in age. Someone asked me earlier when I was talking about the project, why are women involved? And in Islamic tradition, most of the, like any other tradition, religious traditions, it's mostly men that are ordained to become imams. So that's part of the reason that you don't really see. And some of the younger ones are imams in training. They're not formally leading prayers in the mosque, but they're, and we felt that was important to kind of get them early on in the training. So the framework for training, we really couldn't find the curriculum out there or a similar project that people did. We found a lot of work with imams around physical health, cancer prevention, those kind of things, but not in mental health. So what we did is just as we, month to month, we developed these workshops based on their interest, based on the assessments of the therapists that are facilitating the sessions, and when we do after-class evaluations in each session, so we're constantly adjusting our content. In the Somali culture, it's a very oral community, so the discussion is really a way that people express themselves and telling stories of what they're seeing, so we built that into the curriculum. A lot of visual tools to overcome some of the language barriers and things being really abstract in the mind. It's really helpful when people can really see what the brain looks like when people have depression or bipolar disorder or things like that. And Ahmed has brought in a lot of videos into the classes too, so at least people can see people actually going through a session in a clinical setting. Something called red flags. There's a 10 ways that people can identify people in the community that I think the facilitators developed, and I'll show you how it's used in the classroom in a minute. And the focus is really on the imams being educators and advisors, not people who use diagnostics. The trainers don't really talk about the diagnostic tools as much as how do you really identify when people come into the congregation and tell you something, and how do you immediately get them to get the care they need. So you'll see one of the imams, Sheikh Saad, and he's using, it's kind of a red napkin, because we wanted to make, so it's something that they can even use in their office or in their mosque. So he's actually, as Ahmed is describing something, he's kind of saying, that's one of the red flags that I would be watching, so at least kind of to reinforce the message. And then I'll have Ahmed talk a little bit about a recent focus group we've done with imams and kind of seeing how the training they've received so far has really helped them and impacted the community.
My name is Ahmed Hassan, and I'm also a licensed clinical professional counselor, so I do practice. So to give you a little bit background about how I came into this is I was working at a clinic that belonged to the University of Minnesota, which sees a large African population. And one of the issues that we were struggling is that a lot of them will come in and they will get diagnosed and medication will be prescribed. But some of them will just say, why don't we go back to our religious healers and seek help up there? So when Sarah came to me and she said that we will be training imams, I was very excited because I thought, since we have been seeing that a lot in the clinic, it will be a good idea to connect with the imams and and establish that connection. So that's my background. As far as the red flag, I want to mention a little bit about what the red flags are. So these are a main issue or symptoms that we collected that we thought would be necessary. So one of them could be a suicidal ideation. So if they see that in the community or somebody comes to them saying that this person is suicidal, then that will be a red flag where they will refer to the hospitals. Others will be if somebody is not being themselves, like going to their work or going to school, any signs like that will also be a red flag. So we have a list like that. It's not an actual symptom is where they're diagnosing people, but it'll be more of general symptoms that they look for. So one of the goals of this training was that we will change the perception of the community. And by changing the perception of the imams about mental health, then I think that will help us also change the perception of the community in general. So in here, one of the questionnaires that we had, they did share how the training changed their perception about mental illness, where they saw mental illness as a treatable condition with social implication. When we also follow up and ask questions about what they will do, they did share the following points, which is they said if they see somebody who is struggling with an issue, then they are willing to refer doctors based on the information that they learn. They also suggested that they will help people find a job. Even though they don't have a mechanism to help them find a job in the mosque, they can connect them with the network within the mosque, and hopefully that network will facilitate finding a job. They also have a lot of events, social events that happens in the mosque, and they suggested that they will be connecting those events to people who are struggling with mental health issue. They also talked about motivating people to seek help and to seek treatment in a medical setting. The last point is very interesting. They said they will find a spouse if a person is struggling with health issue, and there is a cultural background to this. In African traditional African culture, young man or woman who are struggling with behavioral problem, a lot of time the culture saw that if they get more responsibility, then that will calm them down. So that's one of the reasons they used to help them. Who knows? So these are their own words that they did talk about, that they did share in those trainings. So since the training, they said we have realized how to deal with people who come to the mosque for help. Some accept help, but some postpone, and we recognize signs of depression. And I think this came from one of the training where we train motivational and interviewing, so they will know the stages of change and where the person is. So they won't be forcing a person to change right away, but they will know where they are and then hopefully meet them there. The other piece is they talk about this training has benefited us tremendously, and we recognize many signs of mental illness. And here, you know, we did talk about symptoms of different illnesses, depression, bipolar, and I think so they will recognize when somebody comes to them and complains about different issues, and then refer to appropriate places. Before the training, I thought someone with mental illness meant someone is crazy, and there were only few of them. Now I see the big spectrum and know this can happen to normal people who are functioning. So this is the perception that the community has in general, whether you are either crazy or you are normal. And a lot of people who are crazy in Africa, they didn't used to get help, so people just accept them that that's who they're going to be. So the idea of treatment being available was not something that was very common in this community, and that's what we were trying to change. Now I can help this disease as prevention and treatment. I can help contain the issue. They also talked about educate about this, which meant addiction in sermons. So they also used some of the stuff material that we were teaching in their sermon, especially Friday prayer, where they have a large people coming into the prayer. And it's interesting. I mean, some of these were also personal, where some of the imams shared about their struggle with some of these issues, especially one of the imam talking about social anxiety and how he struggled when he first have to give a sermon. He couldn't get up and do that, and he walked away from the scene. So it was interesting that some of the things that we were talking about, anxiety, became more personal. So the other outcome was that one of the imams were accepted into a residency program in Fairview to become a chaplain. And in this situation, he will not only going to help people with mental health issue, but also people who have other kind of health issue. Another thing that they did was that they also help us come into the mosque, and especially when they have a large people gatherings in the mosque, where we talk briefly about mental health in general and some of the treatments that are available. And then people were asking us a lot of questions about different symptoms and what's going on with them. So that was very interesting because we were able to reach a large population. We also, in the training, we did talk about the spiritual piece in the treatment. So we did talk about mindfulness, we did talk about meditation, which they were very excited about hearing that, because we did show how that could be helpful in coping with mental health. Another interesting thing that we noticed is that Fairview also reported that there was increase about 50% of the number of referral Somali-speaking patients. So one of the Fairview staff came to us, and he did share with us that I think the previous year they had about maybe 6 individuals admitted into their program, and then the second year in 2013 they had about 12. So I don't know whether that relates to training or not, but it was interesting to know that. So the future plan is just continuing the training. We have 1 year left, so we'll continue. And then the way we determine, as Sarah mentioned earlier, is that we always get a feedback from the imams to find out what the needs are in their community, and then basically respond to those needs. And then we will doing a focus group with the imams to get more information on how to reduce the stigma. And then these are some of the lessons that I think we learn, which is faith leaders play a critical role in educating and reducing stigma. And we have seen that some of the referrals that we did get from the mosque were open to the idea of getting a treatment plan, compared to others who were just coming in for a short term, and then once they once they're there, then they were suspicious about the treatment in general. Faith leaders were also eager to get the training, because what they share is that a lot of them have been seeing clients who are struggling, clients who are having a severe symptoms or severe issue where they cannot do anything about it, or people who are resisting to the to their suggestion or their advice. So they were trying to find out, you know, what do we do with this population? And by going through this training, then that opened up other channels that they can use. Explore partnership with the mosque and community-based organization. So this was very interesting, because, you know, any other issue or that we want to educate the community, we did establish a relationship with these imams, and they are open for us to come there and talk to them. And then the final point is, faith leaders can be a great resource for culturally appropriate care.
So we have time for one question for the two of you, if it's related to that last presentation.
I don't know if you mentioned it, or maybe I missed it. What exactly happened in the training? I know you talked about the impact, and you talked about the actions. What exactly happened in the training?
Can you say that again?
Oh, I think. Oh, sorry, you can hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, I was asking, I don't know if you mentioned it, or if I missed it, but what exactly happened in the training?
So the
The training was mostly focusing on, we did train about the symptoms of different illnesses like depression, PTSD, bipolar, and other illnesses. We also provided a training about basic counseling, like motivational interview, where they will use that, some of that, in their mosques when they are talking to people who are having this issue. So it was mainly those two, and then we provide the resource. So we did talk about some of the treatments that are available. So we did cover more about what psychotherapy is and how it's helpful to people who have mental health issue. And also we did talk about medication in general and how it works in the brain and things like that, like shows and videos. So it was comprehensive.
And we had the speakers come in, people that are dealing with the issue. So substance abuse, bipolar disorder, so people that tell their first-hand experience with mental illness and how they're coping with it. And I remember we had about 68-year-old bipolar patient who talked about how he was diagnosed when he was in his 20s, and they were shocked because they thought, you know, again, if you're crazy, you harm someone, you're put in jail or you die, you know, or someone kills you. So they didn't really... they said, we didn't think that people can actually be living with mental illness and functioning in the community and be successful.
And just a follow-up question, if I can. What exactly were the, I guess, evaluation measures to feel confident that these leaders were good enough to go into the community and you know, sort of like read the signs and sort of more or less, I guess, put through the focus.
Remember, they're not out there yet. Next year is when we're going to... No. The people who went to the mosque is Ahmed, the therapist, when they invited them to come to the mosque to train. And what he's talking about, the what they're putting in the sermon is just messages about that these people need to be brought into the community. Because when we started training, they said, if you have any substance abuse problems, we don't want people in the mosque. If you're exhibiting symptoms of mental illness, we don't want you because you're disruptive, you're crazy, and they were shunning it because they didn't want their reputation of the mosque ruined. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this is a huge step for them to even allow therapists, because they were taking a risk of being seen as the mosque where crazy people go. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So just give you the context, the social and cultural context we're operating in is. We started in 2013, people saying, what is this? And we really don't want to touch it. If you're alcoholic, if you have substance mm-hmm. abuse problem, if you're, you know, having a psychosis, you can't come. You can come to my office in the mosque, but you can't be in the prayer hall to having therapists come and for them to even talk about it and say this is something that the community is experiencing, be kind. I mean, those are the words I think they said they're using, but we have not done this. That's phase two, where they actually go out to do the training.
Okay.
Nothing that I want to add is that these people are already going to them, even the ones that we are seeing in the clinic who are going to them. So the idea is that for them to recognize and then talk to the person that decides the religious healing, that they can also go and use other practices.
We're completely out of time, but I think we're going to just, hopefully I think the other presenters will stay around to be able to answer some questions. And so thank you very much, everyone.